With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This week's episode is brought to you by The Man Who Invented Christmas. The Chicago Sun-Times calls Christopher Plummer's performance as Scrooge sensational. And the Washington Post raves, Dan Stevens inhabits the character of Charles Dickens beautifully. Learn more about the movie and these award-worthy performances at BleecherStreetGuilds.com.
Welcome to the Bart Fleming Podcast. This is Peter Bart.
And Mike Fleming.
So Mike, this is the time, of course, when folks like to reflect on the year's scramble of events and to pontificate about the trends. So in keeping with that, the problem with applying all this to 2017 is that the principal examples of drama and comedy have taken place not on screen or on stage, but on what used to be called real life. The drama, I'm of course referring to the scandal surrounding sexual harassment, which signaled the birth of a new movement for women's rights, but also the destruction of many promising careers. And by comedy, I refer to the first year of the Trump presidency, marking the rise to power of a man who, while the product of media fame, goes to great lengths to attack the media and to use the power of the tweet to convey his disdain for pop culture in general. So, given all this, I mean, the big news of film and television, of course, revolves around consolidation. The big Disney deal, with Disney confiscating most of the film and TV assets of Fox, and, of course, the phone company, AT&T, acquiring Time Warner, whose assets include HBO and Warner Brothers and CNN. With an increasing number of viewers streaming rather than buying tickets, Hollywood realizes very much that this is a period like the early 1960s when the ground is shifting under them. In the 60s, remember, all of a sudden everyone woke up to realize that 70% of the film audience had disappeared into television, and that pictures like Easy Rider and Midnight Cowboy were stealing filmgoers away from Elvis Presley westerns and musicals like Paint Your Wagon. So it's all changing. And how do you read the changes, Mike?
Well, to me, there were two humongous stories last year, and one of them obviously was the absorption of a major vibrant studio, Fox, by Disney, which already was nearly strangling the theatrical marketplace. And then the other one was Harvey Weinstein and the end of the Weinstein Company as we know it. And I think that both of them had implications far beyond just one company. I think with Harvey Weinstein, I mean, the idea that this guy, who we all thought we knew, was doing this stuff, and it was somehow kept quiet. I still can't believe it. I still can remember most of my conversations with Harvey Weinstein of a personal nature had to do with our kids, and I feel, you know, I'm still, but I don't know, feel like I'm wandering around in the dark. And then as for the Fox Disney thing, well, it's going to be very interesting to see what that one deal does. First of all, it has to get past the Justice Department. The same Justice Department that has blocked AT&T and Time Warner, even though one would say that basically is a combination of two compatible companies. The Fox Disney thing is different because basically Disney is inhaling And they're going to cherry pick the manpower and the assets and the library of basically a rival business that has the same pieces and same components. And they're basically taking one major buyer off the boards. And I would imagine that that's going to make Sony and Paramount and some of these other companies feel like they need to get larger. MGM is sitting out there. There's all kinds of possibilities. I'm not sure how great it's going to be for creativity in film, but it'll be certainly an interesting thing to follow next year.
Well, it always fascinates me that when the bankers start talking about the entertainment business, it's all about franchises. But this was a weird year for franchises. I mean, overall box office, remember, during the summer, was the worst in years, down as much as 15%. And the so-called franchises that couldn't lose actually lost. The Transformers, the latest iteration, grossed half as much as its predecessor. Even the Justice League was a little wobbly. So if old franchises don't work, the solution, of course, that the bankers have is to just invent new ones. So Universal tried to invent a whole new series of franchise films to be called Dark Universe, led by The Mummy. But even Tom Cruise in the lead, The Mummy stayed entombed nonetheless. And King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, how quickly we forget that, from Warner Brothers, The Dark Tower from Sony. So while Spider-Man and Thor were the exceptions, franchises weren't the magic pill this year, Marvel's contributions notwithstanding.
Well, but you refer to these creatives at Universal as bankers. I don't really see it that way. I think the key here, if Hollywood is really going to go in the franchise direction, the key is to put the right people in charge of those franchises. I mean, you know, you look at Lucasfilm. It's been nothing but giant hit after giant hit. And Kathy Kennedy is the boss. And when she doesn't like a filmmaker's take or anything like that, it's a my way or the highway proposition. And it's worked out pretty well. It certainly hasn't been good for the filmmakers who've been knocked off projects, and some really great young filmmakers have been knocked off projects. And then when you look at the Monsters universe, you know, the key is the wrong guys were calling the shots on the direction of that franchise. The first movie didn't know what it wanted to be. Was it a candy? Was it a gum? Was it a scary film? Was it an action adventure like the ones that Steve Summers did a few years ago that were really fun movies to watch? No, it was just a patchwork, and it just wasn't very good, and it was kind of a waste of Tom Cruise's talents, even though we've seen from Mission Impossible that he's a good guy to hold a franchise. What I would do if I was Universal is, years ago, they had assigned most of those monster franchises to Guillermo del Toro, and I think that we've seen something in Guillermo with The Shape of Water. He's really come of age. He did it at a very reasonable price point, and he may win the best picture of the year for a film that cost, I don't know, under $20 million. There's a guy who eats and lives and breathes these classic movie monsters. He loves them. He knows what to do with them. I think they ought to go back to Guillermo and basically have him manage those franchises and stop doing all this bigger is better stuff. Because the bottom line is, if you're not making a good movie, then you're not going to win. And I think we've seen the same thing with DC. Now, they got very lucky with Wonder Woman and Patty Jenkins, who went 14 years after Munster, winning the Best Actress for Charlize Theron. She hadn't made a movie in 14 years. Where was she hiding? You know, but sometimes these things are surprises. But certainly Wonder Woman was a big plus for DC. But Justice League wasn't. It just wasn't fun. That I think that reflected the darkness in the director, Zack Snyder. And I think they need to go in another direction. They really need somebody who is going to give some collective authorship to those franchises.
Yeah, I agree. You and I tend to like the contrarian thinkers like Del Toro And this is an interesting year for contrarians. I mean, I've always admired the maverick Frenchman Luc Besson. Lucy, remember, with Scarlett Johansson, showed that Europe could also make big action pictures on an international scale. But then, of course, in 2017, Luc Besson released a giant turkey named Valerian that seemed to prove, well, maybe that Europeans should leave big-scale fantasy filmmaking in Hollywood, after all. But the contrarian who succeeded most, of course, this year was Chris Nolan, the tough-minded Brit who I think actually grew up in Chicago. But he decided that having proved his mettle with the Batman pictures deserved a chance to direct a $100 million World War II drama called Dunkirk that had everything going against it. The audience knew the ending before the movie started. The movie was peopled with Brits, no Americans. And the most important figure in the movie arguably was Winston Churchill, the prime minister who really masterminded Britain's wartime strategy. But he remained totally off camera in Dunkirk. And of course, totally dominated The Darkest Hour, which was made, I don't know, was made earlier or later. But that was a modest success. It's not going to gross the $525 million that Chris Nolan's Dunkirk did. So anyway, it was an interesting year for the contrarians. And certainly, I think you make a good point, certainly for Del Toro. I don't think he's going to win Best Picture. But, you know, no one knows who's going to win Best Picture because it's a hopelessly tight race.
Yeah, but here's the thing. When you mention, I don't know about contrarians, but you mentioned Luc Besson. I mean, you know, I sat with him for a long time and saw his sketches for that movie. And this is a guy who basically earned his way and has made hit after hit after hit, who basically was all in on something that was daring and risky and something he wanted to make for a long, long time. I wanted it to be good so badly, but unfortunately it wasn't quite good enough. The storytelling wasn't quite good enough. The visuals I thought were pretty great. But, you know, this reminds me of Ang Lee with Billy Lynn. He was so staked in this new technology where basically there was no difference between people. It was almost like you were watching real life. And the audience just rejected it. But this is the same Ang Lee who went all in on Life of Pi and made one of the most extravagant, spectacular, out-of-the-box films. And so I will always root for those great filmmakers who take those big swings. I think it's so hard to be one of those guys and just put it all on the line. And sometimes you're going to win and sometimes you're not going to win. But I have to say, I think that they have my admiration. What I find that to be a lot better than is people who come in with these basically derivative, formulaic films, which I think we're going to see a lot more of if these companies lump up together. And that is my big concern. And so you say Chris Nolan, I thought he made a pretty, some people found it cold, but I thought it was a very fitting memoriam to incredible courage. And I think that Dark Tower is almost Darkest Hour is almost a companion piece. And I think that film will get more attention if, as many believe, Gary Oldman wins the Best Actor. But like for me, when I look at this year, I just saw a movie called Hostiles. Now, this was an expensive film that Scott Cooper directed with Christian Bale and Wes Studi. And it is just a terrific big scale Western. And it was financed by a guy named Ken Cow, who believed in the movie and put his money up. We saw with the Getty Kid in that movie, all the money in the world, that money was put up by Dan Friedkin and his new company, Imperative Entertainment. We saw the movie I, Tonya. We see so many of these films that are basically, I think, are the salvation of the movie business. They're the antithesis of the bean counter controlled films. And I would put The Big Sick in that category as well. Just a completely unexpected film. And I hope we see a lot more of that kind of stuff next year, but I fear it's going to be harder to make those movies because of all this fixation on the bottom line. And everyone's been whining and moaning about the summer of movies and the box office being down and all this stuff. But I think when you look at the end of the year, global ticket sales will be up a little bit or close to being up a little bit. So the movie business is healthy.
I think it'll be up a bit because of the last minute Viagra-like boost from Star Wars. I mean, that always helps the box office, doesn't it?
This week's episode is also brought to you by the movie Breathe, for your consideration in all categories, including Best Actor, Andrew Garfield. The New York Observer declares Andrew Garfield is remarkable and can't be praised enough. Visit BleecherStreetGuilds.com for information on Andrew Garfield's performance and a behind-the-scenes look at Breathe.
So this is a year of anomalies for me, Mike. I mean, I find, for example, look at among the pictures that really scored, it was women who put them over the top. Beauty and the Beast, number one picture. Wonder Woman and the female leads in Star Wars. I mean, I wonder if Hollywood would do well to write off the teenage boys and focus more on the older 55 crowd and on women. And also, in terms of the sleepers, I love the fact that a picture called Wonder turned out grossed $156 million this year. Now, Wonder, again, had everything going against it. It didn't have a great campaign. It opened against Wonder Woman and Wonder Wheel, and I think there was another Wonder picture, too. But nonetheless, this I think it was a Lionsgate picture, $156 million. It's extraordinary. So we still have this delightful phenomenon of pictures coming out of the blue.
Well, but, you know, look, the movie had Julia Roberts, who I still think is a name, and especially with a family audience, and it looked like, and I thought it was well-marketed. It was a charming film, and, and bravo for them. And the big highlight of the year in terms of out-of-the-box, unexpected successes was Jordan Peele's film, Get Out. I just think if you could have a couple of Get Outs a year, a film that basically has something to say and has a sense of authorship and does outsized box office, and it only costs $4.5 million. I mean, that's a pretty extraordinary accomplishment, and I think it, who knows? Let's see what kind of damage it does during Oscar season, which is almost unheard of for a low budget genre film. I mean, there are still ways to make money in this business, and but it all starts with good storytelling and strong development, and so next year, hopefully, we'll see what happens with this big investment in film for Netflix. Now, they came out with their first big commercial film with Bright, and the critics seem to like to knock it around. But it certainly has gotten a lot of attention, and I wonder how many people have watched it. Now, they don't tell you. This is the big thing that Netflix does, is basically they put these things out and they can say, oh yeah, our audience loved it. But we have no idea, no metric. We know that it was a humongous payday for Will Smith, who basically got paid his full salary and had his back out bought out. So you're talking about a payday of north of $25 million, and everybody got paid well on that film, and it's kind of an eye-opener as to the potential of Netflix as a content creator, which they're going to have to create their own content because all the studios are pulling back. They realize that basically Netflix has built its $4 billion Wall Street valuation on the backs of the content creators, and now Netflix is going to have to go it on their own. More of these over-the-top services are going to be cropping up, and it's a brave new world.
Well, of course, the great advantage of Netflix is that you don't have to worry about the opening weekend because no one notices. And that is the opening weekend that haunts, of course, all conventional filmmakers who do not who release it to the more orthodox releasing platforms, that everyone worries about the Rotten Tomatoes and the opening numbers. And Netflix, they don't have to worry about that. But filmmakers and the stars also don't have that the pleasure of an opening weekend and the opening night and the publicity.
But here's an interesting thing. I watch this show CBS Sunday Morning, which I just which I love. It's like a it's like a bowl of chicken soup. And there was a guy who had the hit toy release of the season. He decided, and it had to do with it's an egg, and you open the egg, and there's a creature inside of it. And he decided that he wasn't going to do any television advertising at all because it was too expensive and your margin for error is very small. What he did was he went on social media and he took advantage of these things. It's this phenomenon where kids are unwrapping toys and there are millions of people watching these videos. And basically this created a juggernaut in toy sales for this particular item, which was the one that parents stood online to try to get at toy stores. And I think with the influx of these of these companies like Apple and Facebook and YouTube getting into this movie-going space, one of the things that we might see is a lessening of P&A costs and the reliance upon scatter network commercial buys. And they're going to finally start to change that over and reach consumers. They can put their trailers online and a gazillion people will watch those trailers if you do it the right way. I think we're going to see a reordering of the way business has been done in so many ways. And of course, if that happens, and theatrical distributors always thought they were going to have to change this inefficient P&A spend, which was just so humongous. If that happens, that's certainly going to smack television networks right in the teeth, because they're not going to be able to charge movie makers all that money for those last minute buys on Thursday night before film opens. It's just one of the many ways that this business is going to change, and everybody is trying to figure out how it's going to go. It's going to be fun to watch. Oh, and one point, Peter, about the year, if I could just throw it in, is I think that the good thing is that we are seeing more of an opportunity for diversity and for women to direct films and for people of all colors to get roles that they weren't able to get before. I don't think the star system means much of anything anymore. And from that standpoint, I think it's actually kind of that's something optimistic. I didn't want to just be a pessimist as we look at the
year-end.
That's all.
And I totally endorse your optimism, but at the same time, I always worry about who we're going to lose along the way, who in terms of the filmmakers as well as studios. I mean, you look at Paramount and its last month, you have Paramount releasing a picture called Mother, which will never get to $20 million, Suburbicon, which will never get to $10 million. You have Downsizing, which cost almost $70 million to produce and is simply not going to open well. I worked for Paramount for some years, so while I agree with your optimistic projections, I also worry about some of the older studios who may not make the cut in the coming year. Anyway, Mike, we got the ups and downs. Great talking to you, as always.
And you as well. Happy New Year.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.